This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
It's Creature Feature, a spotlight on one of the Wildlife Hospital Dunedin's extra special guests.
Well, after many years of doing Creature Feature with Jordana White, it's now time to welcome Suzanne Stevenson, the new General Manager at the Wildlife Hospital here in Lutupōti, Dunedin. Morena, Suzanne, thanks so much for coming and joining us. It's nice to have you here.
Morena, Jeff. Thank you for inviting me. And let me say, I'm a little bit terrified. Jordana has left some very big shoes to fill, and I'm going to do my best to do that.
Everyone has a first time on the radio, right? Is
absolutely.
This yours?
Absolutely, it is.
All right.
Yes.
Well, welcome. Let's learn a little bit about you, Suzanne. Tell us about yourself.
Sure. I've got a classic background of brand and marketing, stakeholder engagement. I've worked in some big corporate GM roles. But mostly I tell people I'm two things, and that is basically a storyteller and a problem solver. And in a business sense, obviously, you know, having a narrative, being able to tell a story is a very powerful tool in trying to solve a business problem or any problem that any business has when it wants to obviously market itself and engage stakeholders.
Now, you've had a career outside of the hospital before here, obviously. Tell us about some of your career highlights.
I have. One could say that I'm a mildly interesting dinner party guest. I know a little about a lot of things. I have done a number of things. I've, just for the last couple of years, actually been working on the New Dunedin Hospital, which, you know, despite what people may think of that, it's been very rewarding of actually seeing the clinicians in place actually planning for the health needs of the community into the future. And but of course, I'm very excited. I'm going from a people hospital to a wildlife hospital.
Yeah.
And there's lots of analogies in that. And of course, I've done some other interesting things around the world as well, like Mongolia, Jeff. You might want to know about that.
Mongolia, tell us more.
Again, a number of years ago, I got approached to do a project for a large organisation in Mongolia. And I got to admit, I had to read a Lonely Planet book to know where Mongolia was and a little bit about Mongolia. And that's been quite fascinating to go there. I was up there for 3 months at a time when English was very new to most of the people working there. In fact, a lot of them had only just learned English in their last year of university. And it's a little like Japanese to English for us, different sentence construction, those kind of things. And they live a lot like us. They have a winter house, mostly for work, where they live in an apartment. In my case, it was in Ulaanbaatar, in the capital. And then they have what they call a summer house, which, you know, if I was going to use a Dunedin analogy, it's like going to Central for your summer holidays. It's just a little bit different. There's a gear or a yurt, some people know about. And they live a very similar lifestyle to us. They love the outdoors, love their animals.
And lots of fun while you're there? Any special incidents?
A couple of very funny things. I remember one day I had a Mongolian counterpart who would take me around places because, again, a lot of people couldn't converse easily in English. And we went through the main square in Ulaanbaatar, and there was a whole lot of people there and a North Korean man speaking, and he explained to me it's a peace rally. And he was talking to the crowd in Mongolian. And at one point, the Mongolian crowd just went crazy, you know, stamping their feet and waving their arms in the air, all that kind of thing. And he was just laughing so much and so hard. And I kind of said to him, what's going on? Because the man looked quite shaken. We were quite close to him. And he looked almost scared. You know, remember, these are all the descendants of Genghis Khan. And he chortled around and he had said, what he thought he said to the crowd was, do Mongolians like hate? And of course, the crowd had gone crazy. But what he had really said is, do Mongolians like cake? And they adore cake. In fact, they have cake for breakfast. So it was a very funny moment, even with translation.
How civilised, cake for breakfast.
Cake for breakfast. And another interesting thing, Jeff, cake and tea, but tea is not like we know it. Tea is warm horse's milk with salt in it.
Horse's milk.
Horse's milk.
Wow, we're getting to learn about some of the wonders of Mongolia. For those who've never been there too, and I imagine for you, there would have been some interesting creatures there since we're talking about the creature feature. What did you notice about the wildlife?
Again, you know, it's a country of quite severe climatic conditions, as you can imagine. You know, desert land and, of course, extremely cold conditions. One thing I was told to look out for, because it still carries the Black Plague today, is the marmots, which are like large rodents. And there are those who will still eat the raw parts of that marmot because they believe it's good for them. But of course, that's where bacterium live. And there have been some cases of not too good outcomes with that. But one of the other thing is their bird species. They've got several very large birds there in Mongolia. In fact, six species of their cranes make up half in the world. So it's a beautiful landscape, very unoccupied. In fact, in Mongolia, you can literally pitch your tent wherever you want.
I understand you celebrate your birthday over there.
Absolutely. And that love of animals came through when it was my birthday. They took me to see the Mongolian orchestra. And I don't know if anybody's ever heard Mongolian music. It's quite unique. You might want to play it one day there. But it's full of long trills and what they call throat singing. So it's very unique. They were very excited that they actually got to see them playing on their home turf. But what I found fascinating is most of the songs are dedicated to the love of a good horse or a good camel, because most of the songs imitate some of those sounds.
Goodness me. Well, let's bring it a little closer to home now, Susan, shall we? Now, I understand there's something coming up on the New Zealand Conservation Calendar that's exciting for us pretty soon.
Absolutely. Everyone's going to be a flutter in a moment, because on the 15th of September, the Forest and Birds Bird of the Year starts. So that's always a hotly contested competition. Everybody loves it. Everybody gets very creative, and there's always a bit of controversy, which is great.
Indeed there is. And it opens our eyes to all the variety of wildlife that's out there and some of the changes that we're seeing in our neighbourhoods. You know, Jordana and I often talked about over the course of the 5 years or so how much, you know, my part of Dunedin, North East Valley, changed in terms of the wildlife that was and the bird life that was coming in, coming over the top of the hill thanks to the Halo Project and everything that's going on there at the Eco Sanctuary and more. So it gets us a bit excited and interested, and we like to back an underdog, don't we?
Oh, we sure do.
We'll have to see how they go. So when does that all open up?
So that opens up on the 15th of September, so it's only a couple of weeks away. Everyone's going to have 2 weeks to vote, and the winner gets announced on the 29th of September.
All right. And I understand it's a bit of a special year, 20 years for the competition.
It is. It is. That's very exciting. And in celebration of that, one of the campaign managers has just written a book, 20 Years of Ruffled Feathers by Ellen Rikers, if I pronounced her name wrong. Sorry, Helen, if I have got that wrong. But the book features 80 birds and one bat.
It was fun, wasn't it, when that British comedian John Oliver got in behind the campaign for the Pūtikatiki, the Australasian crested grebe, suddenly became an international star.
It certainly did. And if you were like me, you know, you pretty much didn't know that species at all. And despite the fact that it's got very unique looks, a very adorable parenting style, and got a propensity for puking, I understand.
Pretty nice. Now, this competition, of course, it's all fun, it's humorous, but there's a serious side to it.
Absolutely. And again, you know, what's fantastic about that, and, you know, we talk about stakeholder engagement, you know, all the time, but that's the ultimate in stakeholder engagement, where you've got a community actually learning things about these species and how threatened they are by extinction, if you didn't know that.
Yeah. Now, What are you backing?
We're going to back the ultimate underdog, so the red-billed gull.
Nice. Okay. And just that might surprise some people.
It will. It will.
I mean, in some instances, people kind of think, well, aren't they just the most commonplace thing? But we know our gull populations are under threat, and you know, they're special birds just like any others.
Absolutely. And we like to think of them, you know, as it's the Captain Jack Sparrow of the bird world.
Right.
Basically.
In all the very best ways.
In all the best ways. They are lovable rogues. Yeah. And you know, again, everyone's got a story out there, but they are really fabulous animals, which I'll talk about a little bit. But I think that those scavenger tendencies, which sometimes annoy us, you know, are about survival as well.
Tell us a little bit more about this bird.
Yeah, so they obviously feed on fish and things like that. They'll hang around rubbish dumps. They'll hang around, you know, any fish places. They'll do that. They're beautiful. They, you know, are very loyal. They're really supportive partners. They share parenting quite equally.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's really lovely. They've got a very long incubation time for their eggs, and they only divorce really when they are young birds and they've failed to reproduce or breed, really.
Would I know a male gull versus a female gull if I saw them?
Quite hard to tell. Mm. You know, again, they'll look very, very similar. It's close to when they start to breed that that vibrant red really comes out. That's usually a bit of a tell that they're ready to breed.
Right. Yeah. Well, we can consider backing the bird as well, can't we? If our Dunedin Wildlife Hospital is doing it, why don't we get behind the campaign with them? We'll hear more about that campaign as it launches, of course. They certainly like a good hot chip anyway, don't they? I know that. I also know that they like a pie. I lost one to the red-billed gulls in the Octagon not so very long ago.
So what I will say is, and they are sneaky. They're sneaky and they're fast. But what I will say, and one of our patients recently was an example of that. In fact, he actually flew into the wildlife hospital.
He checked in himself.
He checked in himself. The team noticed he had sort of dirty feathers on the side of his neck, and they managed to lure him in with a tasty bit of salmon, and he had a hole in his neck. And that can actually happen through eating hot food,
right,
particularly those hot chips. Just like we would if we ingested something that was very hot, it can cause a lot of damage. And, of course, can get infected. So I would say if you ever need an excuse to keep those hot chips to yourself, Jeff, this is a good one.
So your team leapt in and helped out?
Absolutely, absolutely. Patched him up. It was all good after that. But you know, while I laugh about that, it is a very serious concern.
Yeah.
That hot food is a real problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we see a bird like that, that's plumage is kind of, you know, dirty like that, that obviously means that they're very vulnerable to the weather and all the rest of it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Lost their protection on their feathers
absolutely.
And so forth.
So they need some help, definitely.
Suzanne, great to meet you. I wonder what we're going to be talking about over the next few months, but I do know that what we do want to talk about is how we can support the hospital. You've come in at this level. You've had this experience of working in other spheres. What are you getting your teeth into right now?
Yeah, well, for me, obviously, it's getting to know a lot about our wildlife species. Again, I'm not a vet trained. Again, there's some lovely analogies for me. I listened to our vet team, in fact, sitting around the table the other day doing handover with patients, and I kind of smiled to myself thinking, it's exactly like a people hospital. That's what we do. So for me, the big thing will be obviously looking at what we can do for our supporters and partners. They're vital to us in terms of funding. I think Jordana's talked about it before. You know, we really need a hero. We get very little funding for what we do in terms of the services we do. I smiled the other day, actually, when I was looking at this, Wildlife Hospital in Kent a few years back, I don't know if you had seen it, had Johnny Depp come and visit them around that. He signed a postcard for them. They were able to auction that off for a lot of money. But of course, you know, that brought the plight of the wildlife to so many people. And I think that's probably why we're seeing some of these international celebrities and other people really take notice of if we are the wildlife capital. You know, we are very unique. Some of these birds are so close to extinction that everything we can do to, obviously from our point of view, save them, patch them up, let them live a long life, let them keep breeding, we'll do that. But there are also obviously a myriad of other people involved that help rehab, that are doing everything they can. And, you know, we get them all the time. People who, you know, have found an injured bird in their backyard. Somebody, you know, their own cat might have done something. We don't judge. You know, again, just bring it into us. You know, everything is important to us.
Suzanne, you would have also been getting to know your amazing team there. Who never want to raise their heads above the parapet. I know Jordana could never get them to come and talk on the show here. But having visited the hospital, I got, you know, to see firsthand their amazing level of care and skill that they have, that team.
Absolutely. And again, you know, just they're our best kept secret. And I often use a little phrase that I hear quite a lot of, you can't sell a secret enough, you know. As their specialty and what they do every day is just incredible around that. And again, you know, we can't save everybody in terms of the wildlife species that we see. But they certainly do pretty well. And, of course, coming up is hoiho breeding season. And I'm sure Jordana's talked about it before. We become the maternity ward there at the hospital.
Yeah.
In an attempt to obviously save the last of those breeding pairs that we're seeing on the mainland, we're uplifting them. They're coming into hospital, they're getting the treatment, and then going out when we know that obviously they are a little bit helped along the way in terms of diseases that they face, back at the nest, and we hope that they obviously go back to thrive.
Mm. Well, I can tell Suzanne that we're going to have some interesting conversations here on Creature Feature. It's been wonderful to meet a human creature this morning for our Creature Feature spot. Suzanne Stevenson, the new General Manager for the Wildlife Hospital here in Otupoeti Dunedin. Thanks so much for joining us, and we do look forward to catching up with you again.
Thanks, Steve.
The Wildlife Hospital Dunedin treats sick and injured native New Zealand species right here in the heart of Aotearoa's wildlife capital. Their expert veterinary team patches up more than 500 patients every year, returning the majority of them back to the wild where they belong. You can learn more about the hospital, including ways to support this charitable trust, at wildlifehospitaldunedin.org.nz or follow their Facebook page for more fabulous creature content.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.